Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young.
Common mistake that people make when they're making soups at home, especially pureed soup, is they add a ton of water. And then they blend the whole thing and the vegetable stays really waterlogged and bland. I think there's something really amazing about tasting a pureed soup and really feeling like you're tasting the vegetable itself.
On today's show, we join Chef Arlen Llewellyn in the kitchen of Function Brewing in Bloomington, Indiana. She's going to walk us through the steps of an extraordinary soup made with ordinary ingredients, like radishes. Harvest Public Media brings us more on the 2018 Farm Bill and why all taxpayers should be paying attention. Annie Corrigan brings us a story on how constraints can lead to innovation for cooks at the Community Kitchen of Monroe County. And Chef Daniel Orr has ideas for the humble potato. Three different ideas, in fact. That's all just ahead on Earth Eats. Hello, Alex Chambers. Have you got some news for us?
Yes, I do, Kate. Organic food companies are fighting back against the elimination of the Organic Livestock and Poultry Practices Act, commonly known as the Organic Animal Welfare Rule. The rule outlined basic requirements of animal welfare for any food producer to label their products as organic and to bring in the increased revenue that comes with that label. But last month, the Trump administration said it would cut the rule. This week, a number of leading organic food companies, led by Organic Valley, took out a full-page ad in the Washington Post. The ad is an open letter accusing the USDA of not listening to farmers or consumers who have worked for 20 years to write the Organic Animal Welfare Rule. The Organic Trade Association also amended its already existing lawsuit against the USDA to try to force implementation of the rule. And it took little time for last year's wave of sexual assault and harassment scandals in Hollywood to reach the shores of celebrity chefdom. The first was in October, around the same time as the multiple allegations against Harvey Weinstein that launched the movement. John Besh, co-owner of Besh Restaurant Group, stepped down after 25 women who were current or former employees said they were victims of sexual harassment. In December, 10 women broke their silence about harassment from Ken Friedman, owner of the Spotted Pig in New York. And celebrity chef Mario Batali, a regular at the Spotted Pig, soon announced he was stepping down from his own restaurants amid allegations of sexual misconduct. Then, 17 employees at three restaurants in Oakland, California, reported frequent harassment and abuse from owner Charlie Halliwell. The number of accusations against high-profile chefs and restaurateurs continues to climb, and industry watchers say the reckoning has only just begun. Find more on this story from Chad Bouchard on our website, eartheats.org.
Thanks to Taylor Killow and Chad Bouchard for those news items, and thank you, Alex Chambers, for bringing them to us.
You're welcome, Kate. See you next week.
As we've been reporting on Earth Eats in recent weeks, we're at the beginning of a new Farm Bill cycle. Congress starts mapping out how to spend over $500 billion on food and farm programs over the next 5 years. It comes as the U.S. Department of Agriculture is being restructured and the nation's farm economy continues its downward slide. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer explains what's at stake with the Farm Bill and why all taxpayers should pay attention.
Every time Congress gets ready to take up the Farm Bill, advocates for farm safety nets, conservation programs, hunger relief, and vibrant rural communities get a fresh chance to ask the government for money. Hardin County, Iowa dairy farmer Sarah Gilbert was among them, going to Washington, D.C. in November to lobby for programs that have helped her, like conservation and beginning farmer supports. She says walking through metal detectors and into congressional buildings intimidated and inspired her, as she realized everyone else was there to ask for something, too.
It made you really happy that you were there, because it's like, well, if I wasn't here, then who would be asking for this?
Gilbert also says it's important to realize that not just farmers care about the bill. Everybody eats, and it's especially important for people who need federal help to put food on the table. About 80% of Farm Bill dollars go to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP.
Calling it a farm bill is almost a disservice just because it has that huge nutrition component and it should just be a food bill.
Indeed, the phrase Farm Bill is a convenient shorthand for the massive law that authorizes most of what the USDA does. Think giving out rural housing loans and water projects and running the Forest Service. But historically, nutrition and ag programs are paired for several reasons, including the need to get urban lawmakers' votes for traditional farm supports. Central Iowa farmer Matt Russell says the Farm Bill is also a deal among Americans. He weathered a drought thanks to a disaster relief payment. And in return, he makes land use decisions that help clean up water far downstream from where he lives.
And then the other really big piece of all this is that as a farmer, I need to be supportive of the SNAP program.
When a family in need gets SNAP benefits, Russell knows that's his tax dollars at work. Russell served 8 years on a politically appointed panel that helps connect farmers to USDA. His Obama-era appointment extended through the end of 2017, so he served during most of President Trump's first year in office.
I have some real concerns that both with budget and with reorganization, that this administration is potentially looking to downsize those supports for farmers.
The Farm Bill also deals with nearly 80% of the budget for the USDA, which employs about 90,000 people. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue has shifted some of the top posts at USDA, and many remain empty. The department is focused on becoming leaner, says Chris Clayton. He's policy editor at DTN, The Progressive Farmer, an ag media outlet.
The big thing that they sought to change was removing the undersecretary for rural development, and that caused a stir. So they've been pretty quiet about a lot of the changes that they've been making.
But the administration hasn't been quiet about what it says is its commitment to farmers. Trump even spoke at the American Farm Bureau Federation annual convention about crop insurance, a controversial safety net for farmers that might be capped.
And I'm looking forward to working with Congress to pass the Farm Bill on time so that it delivers for all of you. And I support a bill that includes crop insurance, unless you don't want me to.
The current law expires in September, but there's a long history of extensions and delays. Some farm policy watchers have even suggested the next one could wind up being the 2020 Farm Bill. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Support for Harvest Public Media comes from this station and from the Center for Great Plains Studies at the University of Nebraska, host of April's Conservation and Tourism Conference, Plain Safaris in Kearney, Nebraska. Learn how tourism can save our natural environment and help communities grow. More at go.unl.edu/tourism.
More from our Harvest Public Media partners at harvestpublicmedia.org. Next, we have a story from Earth Eats founder, former host, and producer Annie Corrigan. We pulled this piece from the archives as a reminder of how constraints can be challenging in the kitchen, but they can also foster innovation.
Like many hunger organizations, the Community Kitchen of Monroe County gets much of its food from the USDA Commodity Distribution Program. They also receive on-the-edge perishable foods from grocery stores, leftovers from cafeterias. Cooks at the kitchen are used to working with whatever they've got in stock. If there's a specific ingredient they really need, they'll write it on the office dry erase board. That's the wish list.
That's true.
Polly Muckenfuss Brown knocked a couple items off the wish list with her donation today.
And I had a hard time buying peas because canned peas don't taste very good.
But she bought them anyway, along with canned corn and some crackers. Absolutely. For the kitchen's Backpack Buddies program. She spent $145 at Sam's Club, But this food won't last long. One number 10 can equals about 1 inch of pans at the community kitchen.
So this is just over 1 day's worth, just in corn. And then the peas are a little bit different.
That's kitchen supervisor Adam Summer. Food goes fast when you're cooking for 250 to 300 people every night. He puts the corn and peas aside. He's saving that for later.
We'll see you, Adam. Have a nice weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Summer has no formal culinary training. He's learned how to cook during his 12 years on the job. One skill he has mastered is adaptability.
Some of these. Let's see what we got here.
It's 11 a.m. He alternates sipping his coffee with rifling through box after box of packaged food. Planning tonight's dinner starts in the pantry.
Elbow macaroni. More elbows.
They're overloaded with elbow macaroni, but he cooked that earlier this week, so he's looking for something different.
We had a fantastic donation of egg noodles recently. Let's see if there's any more of those left over.
In his ideal world, he'd have enough time and resources to make egg noodles from scratch, but that's just not possible. Once he collects enough bags of noodles, it's into the freezer. He pulls out some pork. Now, in his ideal world, this is the pork he would use. This summer, the community kitchen received donations of animals shown at the county fair. The freezer is now packed with meat from 3 cows, 3 pigs, and 3 goats.
And, you know, this is a pig that was nurtured and loved, and it's going to make a beautiful dish today.
He sets a dozen packages of meat out to thaw. He also grabs a container of baby potatoes.
Oh, then this is my favorite part of the dish here. This is all the cooked down bones of the chickens or turkeys, and it just makes the most delicious, fresh stock that you can imagine.
Egg noodles, potatoes, local pork, and house-made stock. Summer's vision is starting to come together.
So I'm kind of leaning towards doing my mom's Hungarian goulash recipe.
Here's where the trick of working in a community kitchen comes in.
Of course, we're going to have to use paprika. Don't tell me we're out of paprika. This could be the end of the Hungarian goulash.
Think about your own kitchen. You forget you're out of a spice until you go to use it. Unfortunately, Summer can't just run to the store. Take pepper, for instance. That's one of his go-to spices, along with salt, chili powder, and cumin.
Crazy to think about going and buying a big batch of pepper, because I think it's like $40. And when we're trying to keep our budget down, spending $40 on pepper seems a little unnecessary.
In a back room, Summer is standing on his toes, peering into boxes of spices stashed on the top shelf. No paprika, but he does find a bottle of harissa, which is a pepper-based spice blend. This particular bottle lists paprika pretty high on the ingredients list, so that's what he'll use. He tells a coworker to add paprika to the wish list. Back in the kitchen, the countdown begins. 3 hours until dinner service.
Well, I'm just going to grab some tomatoes from the pantry, and then I'm going to start browning my meat.
Actually, they didn't have any fresh tomatoes, so his goulash will have to work with spaghetti sauce.
It's going to have to work. This is kind of the nature of the game.
For WFIU, I'm Annie Corrigan.
A big thank you to Earth Eats founder, former host, and producer Annie Corrigan for that story from 2015. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated was a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers. On Bloomington's east side, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. Brunch every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. NeedMoreRoasters.com. And now we go to Function Brewing in Bloomington, Indiana, where Chef Arlen Llewellyn is whipping up one of her famous soups. This one is a great choice for wintertime, and the flavors and textures are sure to surprise you.
We are going to make a whole radish soup. I say that because we're going to use tip to tail of the radish, which is just a really nice opportunity to use the whole vegetable. There's so many vegetables where we only eat one portion of it, so it's really nice to be able to use the whole thing. We're going to use the radish itself as well as its greens.
So do you normally try to source a lot of your vegetables locally?
We definitely try to work with local vendors whenever possible. It's always a balancing act. In Indiana, we only have a certain growing season, and as a restaurant, we have to think about profit margins. But it's really important to us to work with local vendors, and we do whenever we can. Before we opened the restaurant, I had this sort of utopian vision of the classic restaurant owner walking through the farmer's market with their basket, shopping, picking up food to make specials with at the restaurant that day. I feel like you see that on like food television, and that's certainly never been my reality. I've got so much going on that the idea of going to the farmer's market on task, trying to buy stuff at the restaurant, not run into a ton of people I know, get in, get out, go to the restaurant and shop, just doesn't tend to work. I tend to prefer working with vendors where we can just have a separate arrangement where we pick up from them.
For this recipe, Chef Llewellyn is using locally sourced radishes and chili peppers.
We're going to really layer textures and temperatures in the soup. We're going to have a hot, radishy base, and then we're going to top it with some crunchy and some cold elements. We're going to start with making that little cold topping, which is minced radishes. We're going to use 1 pound of radishes for this stage, which is the standard size that you buy at a grocery store. You're just gonna break these down into maybe 1/2 inch pieces. Okay, so we're gonna transfer these cubes of radish to the food processor. So we're just gonna pulse these up. Scrape down the sides. Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and transfer those to something and put them away in the fridge until we're ready to eat our soup. We're gonna make our garlic poppy seed breadcrumbs, which will be the other garnish for the soup. We have about 1/2 cup of peeled garlic cloves. It's probably about 1 to 2 heads of garlic. We could mince it ourselves or use a garlic press, but we're just gonna have the food processor do that for us. So we're just gonna pulse these in here until it's minced. And now we've got 4 slices of whole wheat bread. So we've torn the bread into bite-sized pieces, and we're gonna have the food processor break them down into crumbs for us. Transfer the garlic breadcrumb mixture to a cookie sheet. And to this, we're gonna add 1/2 cup of extra virgin olive oil.
And how much salt did you add?
That was 2 teaspoons of fine sea salt. And we're gonna just mix this really well so the breadcrumbs are all pretty equally coated with the oil, and spread it out evenly on our pan. And we're gonna cook this for 325 degrees we're gonna have to start checking it every 10 minutes, but it'll probably take 15 to 20 to cook.
Keep in mind that Chef Llewellyn is making large quantities here. I think at home, I might just pop this in the toaster oven and keep a close eye on it. Either way, you'll wanna check it every 5 minutes and stir it to make sure it gets evenly browned.
So we cut them and stirred them periodically until we got a nice, you hear that noise, it's nice and crunchy. And to that, we are going to add some poppy seeds. And now we're gonna make the soup, which, as I promised, will take less work than the garnishes did. Okay, so we want a large onion. Just wanna dice this up. Okay, so we're gonna wanna transfer our onions to a medium stock pot with a couple of tablespoons of oil. And we're gonna cook this for about 10 minutes until the onions start to become translucent and starting to caramelize a little bit. Meantime, we're gonna get our other vegetables ready. So we want 1/2 cup of hot peppers. So we're gonna mince these up. And we want 3 pounds of radishes cut into quarters. again, going to be using the whole radish. Don't feel like you have to remove the little scraggly root ends. It's totally edible. And this is going to be pureed later. No one's going to know the difference. So we're just going to use every part of the radish that isn't the greens. All right, so you could absolutely cut these by hand. I already have my food processor set up, so I'm going to use the slicing attachment on my food processor. And then use that same attachment to slice up some potatoes, but you could definitely just dice them by hand. So we want 3 cups of diced potatoes. Okay, let's go check on our onions. And a few of the edges are starting to caramelize a little bit. And we're going to stop there and add these vegetables we've prepped. 1/2 cup of hot peppers, our 3 pounds of sliced radishes, and our 3 cups of diced potatoes. We're going to transfer all that to the stock pot. Then we're also going to add 4 cups of radish greens. And then we're going to add 4 cups of water. That's a common mistake that people make when they're making soups at home, especially pureed soup, is they add a ton of water. And then they blend the whole thing and the vegetables taste really waterlogged and bland. I think there's something really amazing about tasting a pureed soup and really feeling like you're tasting the vegetable itself. And the best way to do that is to use very little water. So you're going to want to maintain that water level. So you pour the first 4 cups of water in. You want to see where that water level is. You want to keep adding some water to keep it at about that level, but you don't want to add more or you're going to end up with a very soggy, bland soup. First, you're going to want to bring it up to a simmer over medium, medium, high heat. But as soon as you get that simmer, you're going to turn it way down to medium, low and check on it every 15 to 20 minutes. Just stir it. And as I said, you may have to touch up the water level, but this can easily go for a couple of hours and just get nice and soft.
The nice thing about making a soup like this is that you can go do other things while it gently simmers on the stove. You can get the kitchen all cleaned up before dinner, or you can relax, curl up with a good book, whatever you fancy. And you can relax right now while you're listening, knowing that we have the full recipe for this whole radish soup on our website, eartheats.org.
So once the vegetables are entirely cooked down and very soft, just before we are going to blend this, we want to add a few more elements to bring out the flavor of this other radish by seasoning it. We're going to add 6 tablespoons of miso, 1.5 tablespoons of rice vinegar, and a little bit of sea salt. And then we're going to puree the whole thing either with an immersion blender or transfer it in batches to a traditional blender.
If you use a blender or food processor for this, let the soup cool down a bit and be sure to blend it in batches. Hot liquids expand in the blender and can make a big mess if you're not careful. If you have an immersion or a stick blender, you can blend it right in the pot. Another option for a velvety smooth puree would be to run it through a food mill. Make sure you've cooked the soup until everything is really soft for that method.
Into a bowl, you're going to want to layer on those garnishes that we've carefully prepared, and we are ready to serve.
Now for the fun part, we get to taste it.
It has such a complex flavor. I love the heat from the peppers and the radish. It's really nice.
I think you could easily serve that to someone and not point out that it was vegan, and I don't think that they would feel like they were missing out on a dairy or meat element at all. It's definitely very filling and rich. And again, really the only richness comes in those breadcrumbs. Otherwise it's really just vegetable mass that you're tasting, but you know, because it wasn't diluted and it has that complexity from the miso, you're able to serve people mostly vegetables. So I hope you enjoy it.
And enjoy it we did. And you will too. Don't even think about skipping the garnishes. They really make the soup. You've got at least 2 different kinds of crunch here, from the crisp fresh radish to the breadcrumbs. There's some poppy seeds in there too. It's a great contrast to the smooth and creamy soup. I'm pretty sure I can still find some radishes at my local farmer's market. It'll be worth checking. I really want to make it this weekend. Look for the recipe on our website, eartheats.org. And we've got more recipes for you today. Annie Corrigan is back with Chef Daniel Orr for some comfort food. Potatoes, 3 ways.
The Yukon Gold has become kind of a darling of chefs and home cooks alike. And you can get them all different sizes. I've chosen some small ones today. But then there are also the purple Peruvians, the Redskins, the Creamers, all these different kinds of potatoes. One of the easiest ways to cook a Yukon Gold is to boil it till it's soft. And then what I like to do is just smash it down. And then you saute them or deep fry them. And then you can toss them with some seasoning. You could also roast them now with some rosemary and garlic, but they're really good deep fried.
While those are cooking, we'll make two additional dishes with the Yukon Golds, inspired by two European countries. Bubble and Squeak is an English dish, and then Strumpf, which is a dish from Brussels.
For the Strumpf, we've got some boiled carrots. We'll put a little bit of the liquid in there, stir these up and mash them. Okay, and for the Bubble and Squeak, you would normally just add cabbage, but we're going to use some Brussels sprouts. And then we're going to stir it with a little bit of, you could use bacon fat, you could use butter, you could use olive oil, and it will actually squeak and bubble in the pan. That's why they call it Bubble and Squeak. All right, so for the Brussels sprouts, I just slice them and then steam them off quickly. You could blanch them in boiling water and then shock them with cold water so they keep that really nice color. And then this would be great served with meatloaf, with a roast chicken, with pot roast. It's a perfect accompaniment for that. So our butter's nice and hot. We add the potatoes. You can hear it kind of sizzling. And then when that cabbage starts to really heat up, it'll give a little squeak. Back to the Strumpf. Basically, you just mash these up. We're gonna add a little bit of butter. And that's as simple as that. You could add some scallions if you wanted to. And that would be a lot of times served with the national dish of Belgium, like a waterzooi.
The Strumpf is a cold dish, so that one's done. And waterzooi, if you're wondering, is a stew with lots of veggies and either fish or chicken. Our pan is sizzling and popping, so back to the Bubble and Squeak.
All right, so what you're getting is you're starting to get a little bit of brown. Give it a little taste. I love this stuff. And there's nothing more late wintry than that.
Those recipes, too, you'll find on our website, eartheats.org. And we've got a lively Twitter feed. You might want to follow us, at eartheats. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers. On Bloomington's east side, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. Brunch every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. A big thank you to everyone on the Earth Eats team. That includes Aya Bonbinder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Daniel Orr, Indiana University Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Arlen Llewellyn of Function Brewing, Annie Corrigan, and everyone at the Community Kitchen of Monroe County. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Glad you could join us for Earth Eats today. I'm Kate Young, and we'll see you next week.